Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
The U.S. jobs market shows resiliency, complicating matters for the Federal Reserve. And we'll talk winners and losers now that Congress has approved a debt ceiling deal. Plus, U.S. states are split over how and whether to add LGBT history to school instruction.
These efforts have basically broken down along partisan lines. And the schools are the primary space where young people learn about American history.
It's Friday, June 2nd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. A spring hiring surge continued last month, with employers adding 339,000 jobs to the economy. The Labor Department also reported that the unemployment rate ticked up to 3.7%. The report shows a resilient labor market, but as Economics News editor Eric Morath explains, it's a bit tricky for the Federal Reserve.
The latest jobs report numbers add to signs that the economy is maintaining momentum even in the face of rising interest rates. The hiring comes on top of recent data showing that consumer spending remains robust and that the housing market is stabilizing. This complicates the picture for the Fed as officials prepare to meet later in June. There had been talk that the Fed could pause the rate increases that have been going on since last year to give themselves some time to assess how that policy is working. But the hot job market may cause some officials to advocate for continuing to raise rates. What this report definitely signals to us is that further rate increases are on the table for later this summer, and a pause shouldn't be interpreted as the end of the Fed's rate hiking campaign.
The Fed meets later this month on June 13th and 14th. Meanwhile, investors liked what they saw in the May jobs report, which far exceeded Wall Street's expectations. The Dow soared more than 700 points in its best session of the year. The S&P 500 was up 1.5%, and the Nasdaq rose 1.1%. Now on to another big story that's dominated the news this week. The debt ceiling deal is done. The Senate approved the measure last night after several weeks of political wrangling against a fast-approaching deadline. The nation has avoided an unprecedented default. That's overall a good thing. But our congressional reporter Natalie Andrews is out with a list of the deal's winners and losers. Natalie, taking stock of this deal, among the winners here are President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who brokered it. What does this success mean for them?
For McCarthy, this is really the first time he has had to pass must-pass legislation as Speaker, and he showed he could do it. He had to cut off the far-right flank of his conference to do it. They're not happy, but he was able to shepherd a bill through. He's excited about the bipartisan vote. For Joe Biden, this was a deal he didn't want. He wanted a clean debt ceiling, but he did eventually put people in the room and they negotiated it. And the White House is pretty happy that they were able to keep out some of the elements that Republicans sought for. So they're feeling okay about that. And also the negotiators that the White House had in the room were widely respected by Republicans. And we'll see what that means for, say, the appropriations process and negotiations coming up.
On the losing side here, you've listed former President Donald Trump. Why is that?
Donald Trump repeatedly encouraged Republican lawmakers to default on the nation's debt or at least go to the deadline. And we saw that his comments were largely ignored.
Practical question here, Natalie. What happens now that the debt ceiling deal has gone through, that the nation has raised the borrowing limit?
So we've avoided a giant calamity in terms of an economic crisis that would have ricocheted around the world. That's the most important. But there were lots of side deals that were attached to this bill, and we're going to see how those play out. One key deal here is a Mountain Valley Pipeline, which is a pipeline that goes through Virginia and West Virginia and was key for Joe Manchin. That's going to start production. Joe Manchin doesn't think there's anything that can stop it now. He's been pushing for it for years. We also saw when it came to the Senate that lawmakers were very upset about the defense levels that were part of the deal, defense spending levels. And so we saw that Senate leaders came out with a deal to protect Ukraine funding. And so that will certainly play into this fall's appropriations process. And overall, this bill sets up the appropriations process that lawmakers have to next do. It sets spending levels. It sets what they can do, what they can't do. It has a maneuver to avoid a government shutdown. So it will have further repercussions in the appropriations process beyond just what happened in Congress this week.
Okay, so that's the process going forward. Now, before I let you go, Natalie, I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about one more in the losers column, the Navy Yard Chipotle. What happened there?
The Navy Yard Chipotle to residents of D.C. is for some reason often out of items. And when McCarthy took lawmakers there and his security detail, he left on Saturday with a considerable group of people to go to Chipotle. And apparently he walked in, they were out of chips, and he turned around and walked out, went to a different Chipotle that did have chips. So they lost out on some business on Saturday.
All right, a little slice of life there in D.C. Wall Street Journal congressional reporter Natalie Andrews, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And President Biden is set to sign the debt ceiling deal tonight at 7 Eastern time and will be making a speech from the Oval Office. You can stream that live on our website at WSJ.com. In Finland today, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made the case that to help Ukraine prevail over Russia, military support should be prioritized over diplomacy. In a speech, Blinken said Russian President Vladimir Putin wasn't ready to negotiate a pact and distanced Washington from efforts to bring about peace without Russia at the table.
Precisely because we have no illusions about Putin's aspirations, we believe the prerequisite for meaningful diplomacy and real peace is a stronger Ukraine, capable of deterring and defending against any future aggression.
The emphasis on military support comes as Blinken and other foreign officials look to keep Western support for the war from waning. Coming up, U.S. public schools are growing more polarized over the decision to teach LGBT history. More after the break.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
To visit the front lines of America's culture wars, head into its classrooms. Parents, teachers, and politicians have been battling over topics spanning race, gender, and sexuality at schools from coast to coast. And after a number of states enacted laws to prohibit the inclusion of LGBT history and other issues in classroom instruction, some states are now going in the other direction. Reporter Ben Chapman covers K-12 education for The Wall Street Journal, and he spoke to my colleague, our AM What's News host Luke Vargas, about this story.
Ben, unpack what's going on now in a number of states where it seems like there's something of a backlash underway, states putting LGBT issues into the classroom.
What's happened is at least six states and the District of Columbia have passed laws to mandate or recommend the use of LGBT inclusive curricular or standards in schools. And there were laws introduced in at least four other states, including New York, Massachusetts, Washington, and Missouri. An example of this would be a history class in a unit on McCarthyism and the Red Scare in the mid-20th century. That unit would also include lessons on something called the Lavender Scare, which was a mass dismissal of gay people from government jobs. And the idea behind these things is to provide a broader and deeper understanding of history and society, and sort of as stated by the lawmakers I spoke with, foster a sense of inclusivity and comfort for LGBT students in schools, where data suggests that these students face more bullying, have a variety of issues around feelings of not being accepted or excluded. And bringing these lessons into the classroom is meant to make them feel included.
Ben, I mean, is it clear what, if any, consequences there are of having these widening differences in how history is taught within a country?
These efforts have basically broken down along partisan lines. Folks who research this stuff and prognosticate about the future suggest that people learning one version of American history versus learning a different version of American history can contribute to political divides and social divides that we've been seeing. There's not a lot of data on it, but the way that people vote and the growing divides that we're seeing in the policies that states are choosing for themselves reflects the way that people understand the country that we live in. And the schools are the primary space where young people learn about American history.
Ben, are you seeing signs that this debate is likely to spill over from being a state and local issue to maybe one that goes national, possibly becoming a 2024 presidential campaign issue?
We've already seen these issues move up the food chain from school boards to city hall, then to the state legislature. It's become a campaign issue that governors use when they're running for office. And it's threatening to become an issue in the upcoming presidential race. So it's a little bit of a hot topic that could either work out for politicians or could backfire and either not add to their likelihood of getting elected or even work against them.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Chapman, who covers K-12 education for us out of New York. Ben, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
In other news, the Justice Department has closed an investigation into the potential mishandling of classified documents by former Vice President Mike Pence. That's according to a letter sent to a lawyer for Pence, which said prosecutors would not seek any criminal charges. The news comes as Pence is expected to launch a bid for the White House. The Securities and Exchange Commission is dismissing about 40 enforcement cases after discovering some of its employees had improperly accessed legal records they shouldn't have been able to see. The SEC said it dropped the cases to conserve resources. The dismissed cases involved the SEC's controversial in-house courts. Critics argue such courts are at odds with the federal government's separation of powers because they give the agency both judicial and prosecutorial powers. CIA Director William Burns made a secret trip to China last month, according to a U.S. official who described it as a bid to keep lines of communication open between the two countries amid tense relations. Burns is the highest-level administration official to visit China since the U.S. shot down a suspected Chinese spy balloon earlier this year. The CIA and the White House declined to comment. And we exclusively report that Twitter has lost a second top safety executive in the last 2 days. According to people familiar with the matter, AJ Brown, the social media company's head of brand safety and ad quality, has decided to leave the company. The exit comes after Twitter's head of trust and safety, Ella Irwin's departure yesterday. And finally, last weekend, a chatbot owned by the National Eating Disorders Association, or NEDA, was taken offline after social media posts revealed it was providing diet advice. The chatbot, named Tessa, was meant to provide help to users at risk of developing eating disorders. But instead, it violated NEDA's policies. Tessa was built by researchers to serve up pre-written answers to questions. Our family and tech columnist Julie Jargon says Tessa wasn't designed to work like generative AI chatbots like ChatGPT.
The university researchers who developed Tessa worked on it for a few years. It was incapable of providing unscripted answers. There were a set of answers that were developed to respond to any type of question that might come without the ability to go off the rails. They don't know yet what happened. A new company took over the administration of the chatbot. It's named Cass. And their CEO told me that the company uses AI to understand what users are typing and that some of its other chatbots that it has developed have generative AI. But he didn't answer the question I asked him about whether this Tessa chatbot had generative features. They say that they're investigating what went wrong.
Nita says Tessa won't go back up until it can ensure the chatbot can't generate responses outside of the strict guardrails it initially had in place. You can hear more about this story on the Wall Street Journal's Tech News Briefing podcast. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Mohsen Ali, with help from Anthony Bansi, Kate Bullivant, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Alan Haberchak, Sandra Kilhoff, Catherine Millsop, Valana Patterson, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us, and we'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day, but what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/washingtonwise.